Welcome to the Writer's Weekly Podcast, a forum geared toward the writing enthusiast and those who want to make money from their writing. I'm Brian Whidden, Managing Editor of Writer's Weekly, and I'll be your host along with Angela Hoy, the creator of Writer's Weekly and President and CEO of BookLocker.com, a full-service book publishing company. Whether you want to learn how to become a professional writer, how to find writing gigs, or even publish your own book, then you come to the right place. We'll be discussing all kinds of topics relating to the writing and publishing industries. Don't forget, you can also click over to writersweekly.com. There, you'll find not only thousands of articles about professional writing, you can also find current paying markets and job listings to help you boost your writing career and even your bottom line. But for now, let's get on to this episode of the Writers Weekly Podcast. And hello again. Welcome to another episode of the Writers Weekly Podcast. I'm Brian Whidden, and with me again is owner-operator of BookLocker.com and the creator of Writers Weekly, Angela Hoy.
How's everybody doing today?
I'm good.
Good.
And
me
how
too.
Are you?
Awesome.
Well, we survived that almost tornado last night, so I think we're doing pretty good today.
We have had way too many
warnings.
Tornado warnings in the last month. And I don't even think it's not supposed to be tornadoing here.
Well, the first 2 weeks of April is our tornado season.
Yeah.
It's almost June.
Yeah. Plus, it's like, and I'm not exactly complaining because I don't like I'm from Florida and now it's like I can't stand 90 degree weather. I don't get it other than I'm becoming an old fart. But I'm no longer acclimated to heat. So, but it's like in the 60s and 70s here. And it's May.
Yeah, I've had to wear a sweater outside every day for the past month.
Crazy.
I think 1-2 days I got up to 90, and well, I stayed inside on those days. So.
Well, when I was out fishing on Friday, and this is this week's news from the home office. Mm-hmm. So, my friend and I went out fishing the other day, and there were a couple of times where, it was 11, noon, 1, and the wind was blowing across the water, and we were actually cold.
Yeah, that's really odd.
It was crazy. Temperature was, I think, 75.
Yeah.
But with that wind, it was actually a little chilly. So, Angie, you actually haven't heard this little part of my fishing trip.
Okay, it's been 4 days?
It's been 4 days.
What did you not tell me about?
Well, I haven't told you everything about it only because I got home Friday and I had wound up getting kind of dehydrated, which translated into a migraine that I had to deal with all day Saturday.
Yeah.
And so all I was thinking was how much misery I was in. And then Sunday, of course, was church and everything goes on air. So here we are on Monday, Memorial Day. Anyway, so you remember when you were watching me on Life 360 and you were getting worried because the boat hadn't moved for 2 or 3 hours and you were texting me wondering,
Are
you okay?
Now, Life 360 is an app that we put on our phones. So at any point in time when we're not together, we can, I know this sounds really...
sounds like Angela doesn't trust me very much.
Hey, you brought it up. Anyway... So if Brian's late getting home, I can just open my phone and click and I can see where his vehicle is. I can even see how fast he's going. A couple weeks ago, he was driving through Fort Oglethorpe, I think, and it showed me he was stopped at a stoplight. So I called him on the phone. I said, hey, there's a Dunkin' Donuts right there to your left. Felt kind of weird, didn't it? And I didn't tell you. Here's something I didn't tell you. When I looked you up when you were fishing, I got up that morning and you left at dark 30, right? Yeah. When I got up, I just clicked to see where you were. It actually showed not your vehicle. It showed a little boat next to your head.
Oh, really?
It knew you were in a boat. I got a screenshot.
Well, it's because I was on water.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
So anyway, friend of mine from church and I went fishing on Friday. And when you saw us not moving for several hours, that's because we had found us a really nice pocket of bluegill and sunfish, little panfish. And we were fishing in Alabama. So the bag limit for those is 40,
you can catch 40 of these things and be legal. And it was great because we were fishing with live worms. We had been fishing for bass most of the day with lures, and we just weren't having a whole lot of luck. Everything we were catching was too small and everything. So we went to another area he knew about to go fish for these panfish. And we found this pocket where it's like almost every cast we were catching a fish. And it was great. It was a blast. But this particular spot was right off. It was a lake, but I guess you would have to call this a seawall. It was a residential area with big, beautiful houses. I mean, these things were clearly multi-million dollar houses. But we were like, 20 feet off this seawall fishing this area in amongst docks and stuff.
It actually said on the app, it showed you in a boat, but it said you were at the specific address at a house.
Yeah.
But I could see that you were still in the water. So,
So
I knew you hadn't been kidnapped.
Nope, we hadn't been kidnapped. So we had hauled in about 34 of these things, and we were actually about 30 minutes prior, we had actually started talking about, when should we, head on in? Because I think it was already getting on almost 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we hear somebody hollering out to us, hey guys. And we look up and there's some guy on the balcony of his multi-million dollar home there. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we got some kids coming out over the weekend and they really want to do some fishing. Can you just, can you leave some fish for them? So, and my friend, he got a little, I'm just like, oh, yeah, no problem. And the reason I said that was because we had already talked about leaving.
Yeah.
And I knew we had lots of fish and then I had to clean every single one of these stupid things. And I'm like, it's probably about time for us to head back anyway, because you gotta get back to the dock, get the boat back on the trailer, and we had an hour drive to get back to the church where I'd left my truck. And
plus cleaning all those fish.
Please clean all the fish. Yeah. But he got kind of perturbed that this guy was asking us to leave. He's like, not to the guy, but he's like, man, this is a public lake. We could be here and fish all we want. We haven't even hit our limit.
Right.
And I'm like, I get it, dude. I know, and I said, but we already talked about leaving. So, now's as good a time as any. He's like, yeah, I understand that. But I mean, what kind of nerves this guy got come out here telling us to stop fishing? And I'm like, well, I get it. And I told him, I said, listen, if he had come out here and yelled at us, told us to get out of here, I probably would have shown my ass a little bit.
Right.
I probably would have had something to say back to him. But the fact that he actually came out and it was kind of like, would you please, leave some fish for the kids? I'd be interested if anyone listening to this likes to fish public areas, what you would do in such a situation, because it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
That somebody from their property, we were not on their property, we were in the water, it's public water. We had every right to be there. Sure. We're licensed fishermen. We were doing what we were supposed to be doing, and this guy asks us to leave.
I guess all those fish were going to stay in that exact spot until his guest showed up.
I do. Well, it was like a bedding and spawning area. Oh, so okay. So there will be plenty of fish there when those kids are out there fishing.
Right.
I do kind of understand, because you used to live right on the water, near a what they call canals in Florida, which anyone can ride their boat up into and fish, or and everybody's got boats on docks right off their property and everything. I don't know, how did you ever feel when people were just kind of, we were anchored right off your property, throwing lines in and catching fish. Did you care? I mean, did it bother you that somebody was like pretty much right in your backyard?
Well, it only bothered me if they would like anchor out there and play really, really loud music. Especially if it was during my nap time.
Oh, there's
that. But then when we lived on the boat.
I remember living on the boat.
There were issues.
Mullet fishermen.
Yeah. Now I appreciate the fact that they're trying to make a living, but they would come within inches of our boat They would leave wakes back and forth. Our boat was banging all over the place.
They would throw cast nets and basically hit your boat with the cast net because the mullet were kind of under your boat. So they were trying to get a cast net down under the boat to get these mullet, and they were hitting our boat with a dang cast net.
And if anybody doesn't know, a cast net is what's weighted down all the way around the circle
with lead weights.
Lead weights. So we would hear this clunk, 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 you know, on our boat. I do have a interesting fishing on public property story from my first husband. So this is years and years ago. He was fishing with our two oldest kids when they were little bitty. Excuse me. We lived probably 50 feet from an inlet that went into Galveston Bay, and it was always full of fish. And it was on a road. So he would take the kids fishing down there and stand on the road, dirt road, and cast. Well, these two teenagers came by in a boat, and they went. They saw that it was a guy trying to fish with his two little kids, you know, and they went really close to the shore. It was like a little pontoon, a little, just a two-man boat with a, you know, little bitty thing, metal thing. And they went right by, you know, they left a wake, they ran over the lines and everything. My first husband, well, I won't go into that.
From the things you've told me about him, I'm assuming he didn't take that well.
No, he didn't. And then they turned around and did it again. Jeez. And then they turned around and did it a third time. And my ex-husband cast his lure into their boat and hooked one of them by the hand. That kid screamed like a girl. It was a teenager. And then they went, he got out of his hand, and then they went on their merry way. And then, of course, my husband packed up stuff and ran back to the house and arrested. That was rude.
That's one way of dealing with it. And you can always say, hey, I was just trying to cast a line. I didn't have any idea they were going to go in front of me.
I tell you what, if he was aiming for the hand, it's a pretty good aim.
I've seen a lot of, heard stories and seen videos on YouTube because I'm also a hunter, and watch a lot of, you know, hunting videos on YouTube. And there's a lot of incidents where people actually go onto public land because they have this fantasy of being, you know, the savior of these animals, and they'll actually, they'll figure out where hunters are and then walk into that area just to cause a disturbance so that the deer won't show up. And, you know, that's got to be a frustrating situation because, first of all, you can call a game warden, but it's going to take them forever to get to your area because that is illegal.
Yeah.
You probably really want to shoot these idiots, but you can't because that's illegal.
Yeah.
You know, and they've already ruined your hunt.
As good as deer does.
And they don't taste nearly as good as deer. But yeah, that would be very frustrating. I still haven't figured out exactly what I would do in that situation. The places I hunt are so remote that you'd be an idiot to want to go out there and try to
mess with the hunters.
And a lot of the hunters where I hunt probably would shoot you.
Well, these teenagers, they were not environmentalists. They had their own fishing poles.
They were just being jerks.
They deserved it. I hope the kid has a scar to this day.
So if you were fishing off somebody's backyard and they came and asked you to leave, how would you handle that?
I'd say public property, plenty of fish for everybody.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
And I will add to everybody that Brian spent a day and a half cleaning all those fish.
I spent I think 2 hours till the sun went down and it was too dark to do any more cleaning that night.
And then the next morning
I got up and with a migraine headache, I had to sit there and keep cleaning these fish. But we have 34 times 2 to 60. We have 68 little fish fillets.
Awesome.
So we're going to have a lot of fish sandwiches and fish stew. And
you do all the cooking.
Fried fish and fish fingers, or who knows what I'll come up with. Awesome. Well, today we are going to discuss writing contests in general. And we're also going to be focusing on our writing contest, the Writers Weekly 24-Hour Short Story Contest that we do every quarter. And
specifically, we're going to be talking about how to win writing contests.
You go. So Angela wants to tell everybody how to better write stories for writing contests so that you will have a better chance at winning these things. So Angela, for starters, let's talk about when people write for our contest, who judges these things?
I'm one of the judges, and Clayton Jones is one of the judges. He is the English professor at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and well, it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Clayton was already in one of our episodes, the one on AI. So if you want to hear a little bit about from Clayton, you can listen to that episode, and he will be on some future episodes with us.
Yeah. The judging process, we take all the stories and put them into one document. And then each judge gets a copy of that document. It's several hundred pages long. And for my end, I print out a spreadsheet showing the title of each story, the name of the writer, their email address, and what page they're on.
Mm-hmm.
And I also will use my iPad because I load it up on our server for myself. And if I want to use my iPad, I can, you know, judge it that way. And I'll read through every single story and score them all 1 to 10. Now, the one that won our most recent contest, he got a 10 plus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically how it works. And then Clayton and I compare notes and we narrow it down. And there's 3 top winners and there's 100 honorable mentions. And only 500 people are allowed to enter.
And today we are doing something new. This is new to our short story contest because we now have a podcast. We are going to actually... Well, I have actually read the first and second place stories.
Recorded them.
Stay tuned for this because, yes, I recorded them in classic storytelling fashion, including background music and sound effects. So hang tight. We're going to save that for last.
Yeah, you had a lot of fun
with
that.
Little teaser here, but hang tight because you're going to enjoy this.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
You're going to enjoy this. You judge them, Clayton judges them, but then you go through them again, everybody that got a certain number and above, and then you have to go through them again and figure out of those which ones are
the
best.
Which ones are the winners,
These stories get read like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
The better ones get read 2 or 3 times before the judging. Mm-hmm. I help judge for a while, but I'm
you're too busy.
I like writing more than reading. So,
plus you're more of a nonfiction guy.
Yeah.
I like reading fiction. You like reading nonfiction.
I like documentaries and stuff that really, like
that
history kind of stuff.
You were good at it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it too at a point, but I'm not a sit for hours and hours reading things kind of guy. My mind is too, I'm too ADD. I don't know.
Well, we have a lot of fun with the contest on occasion when we have time. There was one occasion that there was a topic about a couple on a beach, and this was back when Allie, also helping with judging, since got promoted, and we took the stories away from her, and she wasn't very happy about that, but she's got way too much to do anyway. I put a fake story in the contest. Of course, I was never going to win, and I wanted to see what she would judge me, plus I wanted to make her laugh, so it was this very amorous situation between this couple on a beach, the sun setting, and the bathing suits are coming off and everything. And, you know, lots and lots of adjectives and adverbs. And then at the very end, I had the characters talk to each other, and they were named Allie and her husband's name. She called me immediately on the phone. I can't believe you did. Disqualified.
Full disclosure, I entered a story into this one. Again, I can't win, but we like doing this just to see.
Just to fool with the judges.
Just to see where we end up at. And I got graded an 8 by
Clayton.
You got
Clayton, an 8. Yeah,
so,
you did.
Yeah, so that's not
now,
bad.
Now, I knew about the fake story up front, but...
And once it gets judged by the judges who didn't know that we take them right back out. You will never hear my story or Angie's story as a winning story.
Part of one of the winners, but when I let Clayton know... Mm-hmm. Which story that we had, this is the first time we've ever done this to Clayton.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, you remember the story about the chick who, you know, drove
a motorcycle
and drove it off a cliff? And he went, I said, Brian inserted that as a joke. He went, oh, man.
So, writing contests in general, Angie, good or bad, you know, what should listeners know about entering writing contests in general?
Well, there's short story contests, there's novel contests, there's all kinds of different writing contests. Unfortunately, the entry fees for many of them just don't make it worth the author's while or the writer's while. It's nice if your book wins an award, that you can like put on your cover on your website, which is just a JPEG, isn't really going to sell more copies of your book, isn't going to, you know, get you any real recognition. A lot of the contests, you know, they're spammers. Some of them are scammers. And, you know, some of them, like, everybody wins. And it's just like NaNoWriMo.
NaNoWriMo
which we
was...
covered, what was that, episode 3?
Yeah, I think
episode 3 of our contest.
And it's like, all you have to do is write 50,000 words and
you're a winner.
Yeah.
So entry fees for any writing contest, I myself would pay more than $10 or $15 to enter. Ours is only $5, but, you know, it's short stories, so.
And I think you've discussed with me before that some of these people, I guess, who host these will actually take some people's stories and use them without the permission of that writer, mm-hmm. or you know, not with with no regard to the rights of that. So,
well, sometimes it's in the fine print.
Yeah.
And in our rules, it states, you know, we're going to publish your story if you win first, second, or third place.
But we're going to, your name is on it.
Right.
You get all the credit. We don't, you know, use it to just, you know,
right,
build content for ourselves. It is, you're getting the accolades there. In fact, these two stories that you're about to hear, we waited until we had these writers' permission to give you these stories.
Specifically reached out to, and we're not doing the third place one because we're going to run out of time. However, if you go to 24hoursshortstorycontest.com, at the top, click on all winning stories and click on the current one. You can read the third place winner too, and it's an absolute beautiful story.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful story.
How did 24 Hour Short Stories Contest get started?
24hoursshortstorycontest.com.
I'm sorry.
This is going to sound funny. I was getting a lot of complaints on writersweekly.com this has been going on for, I think, 27 years. And from people entering contests and feeling like they get ripped off and it was too expensive and they didn't really get anything back for their money, no value, no recognition. And I really like reading fiction. Mm-hmm. And one day I just came up with this idea. Hey, I got thousands of readers on Writers Weekly. I wonder if they'd want to participate in a contest. How could I make it unique? Oh, you only have 24 hours to write it. So whenever, and it happens every quarter, the summer one is in July, and the date is on our website. At 12 p.m. Central Time on Saturday, that's noon, on the date of the contest, we email all the participants the topic. We also post it to our website in case of spam filters, you know. And by 12 p.m. on Sunday, Central Time, noon, I have to have it in my inbox.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very challenging thing for people, but they love it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. On the website, we have testimonials from participants over the years that have just emailed us, and almost everybody talks about how fun it is, and it really helps with their creativity. Also, want to point out that one of our participants took his short story and turned it into a novel and got a traditional publishing contract.
Isn't that cool?
I will post a link to that article at the bottom of this episode.
Okay. So, most importantly, Angie, what makes a winning story? Let's get in the meat and potatoes of this.
Okay. Well, I have four different things.
Okay.
For our contest, it's a specific topic, and you have to touch on that topic in some way to qualify. Okay. So that's kind of loose, but it has to be obvious to us that you didn't write a story one day and then enter our contest and change one sentence.
Yeah.
Okay. We've seen that happen. We know what's happening, and you're going to get a one if you do that. Okay. The most important thing is to have originality with where you take that topic. So we tell people, here's the topic. Think where you would take that. Just right off the top of your head. Don't go with that idea. Don't go with the second or third idea. Find something completely unique. And we'll explain later. We're going to read you the topic of the most recent contest, and then we're going to tell you the most common topics and the most common ways that stories were written.
And I would add that each topic that we give is seasonally related.
Yes.
So we do this by the quarter. So you have a spring, a summer, a winter, a fall, a spring,
not in that
summer,
order.
Fall, winter.
Yeah, we get it. Yeah.
contest, and the topic will be based on the season that we're in.
It's not, now it's not a season topic. Well, it's whatever's happening is happening during that season.
Yeah.
For example, our most popular topic contest every year is the fall one. Because we always announce the winners before Halloween. Stuff. Well, not exactly Halloween there's always beautiful fall leaves and, you know, crisp, cold air. But then with regarding the character, whatever's going on, that's completely not related to the season. It's just their surroundings
that gives
that
you
time.
A setting. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay, so originality. What else?
Excellent writing with no errors.
Ooh.
I have...
Better get Grammarly.
Now... If it's an outstanding story and it's missing a comma, I'm not going to ding him for that. I'm really looking for a really good story. If it's just full of errors, or if it's a story I can clearly tell you didn't even try. For example, we also have word count limits. They usually range between 800 and 950 words, and each contest has a different word count limit. Sometimes I get a story that's 50 words.
Yeah.
Didn't even try. And maybe thought, maybe I'll win some kind of prize. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So we also see that sometimes adults will enter children. This last contest, a teacher entered his classroom.
I remember you telling me that. Yeah.
They had a writing club at school, and he was going to get them all in there on Saturday, and they were going to write the stories for the contest, and
That's
he was
awesome.
Going to submit on their behalf. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great idea. If there's any teachers listening, that's a fantastic idea for a class. In fact, since it's a 24-hour thing, heck, why not set up some kind of overnight lock-in kind of, you know, kids get to spend the night out there and
they can read the stories to each other and everything. And yeah, and the teacher
work
can
on
submit
their stories.
On
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. The idea of, you know, getting kids involved with something like this. That's amazing.
Oh, also want to add that we do get some risque topics, and Writers Weekly is a family friendly publication. When I talked about the fake story on the beach, I didn't use any bad words. I don't have a problem with some bad words, but
we're not looking for erotica here.
Right. Exactly. And every kid nowadays knows all the bad words anyway. So,
yeah. What's a word? So you mentioned word count.
Yeah.
And that's one of the hardest things.
Yeah.
Honestly, is keeping within that word count.
Yeah.
Because I think I've submitted, this wasn't the first time I slipped one in there. I think I did another one, but it's like, I'll write that story and it's like, I'm watching that word count on the bottom of my Word document. It's like, oh man, I got to cut more stuff out of here. Dang it.
And, I got a funny story.
That is the
that.
Challenge. Go ahead.
There was one, this is years ago. I think we had still lived in Maine. First place winner, second or third, I can't remember, but it was on the website. And a woman wrote in to me, don't get me started on the sour grapes emails I received from, I've mentioned this in a previous podcast. My mom says my story's better than the first place winner.
That story.
I know. I get those all the time.
So this
woman wrote in and said, the only reason that person met the word count limit was because she used a bunch of hyphenated words. I said,
oh.
I said, why didn't you think of that?
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
That's creative.
It's very creative. Yeah. I mean, she had to go in there and hyphenate some things. I'll tell you a secret. If you have, you know, a word, space, dot, 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 space, word, like somebody's like thinking or something.
Yeah.
If you remove those two spaces, it turns into one word.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, you really got to get creative. And we use Microsoft Word's word count option. It's in the rules.
Yeah. But that is by far I think one of the most challenging things for creative writing is how much idea you can deliver to the reader with as little words as possible.
Right.
You have to be a real wordsmith to get that down pat. And it's a real challenge.
So many of, for example, if a contest is 950 word limit, you wouldn't believe how many stories we get that are exactly 950 words.
Yeah.
I mean, they shaved it right down to the nickel. Yeah.
What else? What else makes for a winning story?
My two favorites, surprise ending.
Surprise ending.
We have stories that are, you know, they're really exciting, everything, and at the end, it just kind of slows down, and that's basically the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I wanted a surprise. It says it in the rules. Give us a surprise ending. We love surprise endings. That's great. And our
If you enter our contest, remember, Angie's going to be sitting reading, 200, 300, 500 stories.
Yeah.
So yours better jump out at her. Come up with something real catchy. And
the second place winner, which you're going to be reading on the current podcast, that's a surprise ending.
Yeah.
That was a classic example of like, oh, wow. Oh, yeah. That was great. Yeah. Yeah. Also, we like humor.
Yep.
You know, your story does not have to be humorous. In fact, if you click on all winning stories on our website, you'll read a bunch of heart-wrenching stories, but you'll also see some funny ones, and we always like funny stuff. So,
okay.
And
don't
send me sour grapes emails afterward.
That's don't not send gonna us affect, the sour grapes.
That's not going to affect your us judging you
nope.
for the next time you enter, but I just don't like it. It's really a waste of my time during the day, and I'm an extremely busy person.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when we put that huge document with all the 500 stories in it, or however many people entered or for that one, the title of the story is at the top. Then there's the story. The person judges it, and then only later down in the document do they see the name of the person. So there's we're not judging.
So you don't
based
even
on,
know who it is.
We don't know who that is when they get their score. Yeah.
Well, are you ready for me to read what the topic was this time?
Yeah, our most recent contest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is if you were to enter our 24-hour short story contest.com. This is what you'd end up with, or this is what you would receive at the start of the contest.
If you'd entered the last one.
It is basically the idea of the story, and here we go. This is what everyone had to work with this time around. She was on her annual trek to the spring fair to obtain that one essential item. She walked quickly, ignoring the tiny purple flowers dancing in the breeze. It had been a hard winter. While she knew it was wrong this year, she'd have to try to steal it.
Now, everybody
what
think.
What is she going to steal?
Right.
Oh.
Everybody think, where would you take that?
Mm-hmm.
Where would you take that? And again, don't go with your first, second, or third idea. Go somewhere else with it.
Now, we always get every contest. There's, mm-hmm. we start to see patterns.
Yes.
There's just... a whole lot of stories that all kind of
look the same.
Not that anyone's cheating.
No.
But what it shows is that a lot of people just grabbed the very first thing they thought of, mm-hmm. which is usually the same thing a whole lot of other people thought
of. Right, right.
So what are the common topics that you wound up with on this one?
This particular topic. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I want to mention that while Clayton and I are judging stories, we are making notes on the printed part.
Yeah.
When we notice, that's the third story that sounds pretty much the same storyline. And so we make notes about common topics.
Yeah.
And then when we announce the winners, we also include in the email, and we put it on writersweekly.com as well, a list of the common topics for this contest. So she's going to the fair. She's got to steal something. So... several stories in this contest included the phrase by hook or by crook. We lost count of how many characters got arrested, and there were quite a few scuffles when the thief was caught. Now, everybody reading might think, well, those could go 100 different ways, but they really, you know, it was, she walked into this booth, she walked out, she got arrested, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So when you read the same... again, this isn't same people reason. Copying each other, but it's the same idea over and over and over.
Right.
That starts to, it lacks the originality. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. By far, the most common item the main character needed was a type of garden seed.
Now, interestingly enough, I don't think I would have thought of that on my own.
I know. So I don't think I would have either.
That
but,
would have been one of those things that kind of develops as you read a whole bunch of them. Yeah.
But if you think about it, it was a hard winter, which implies everybody didn't have enough to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
So that could have been where that idea came from. The most common vendor in the stories was an apothecary.
What are they, picking up potions?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Numerous stories included baking contests.
Baking contests.
Those got our mouths watering. I read about so many different kinds of pies. I was going to ask you, Brian, there was a... blueberry raspberry pie, and it had this lattice shell on top with the big fat sugar things. So I'm like, I gotta get Brian to make me one of those.
Well, we just happen to have a really, really, really good blueberry crop coming in this year.
That's right, we do.
And we have plenty of blackberries and raspberries here on Whidden Farm. So you might get yourself one of those pies. So
lots and lots of pies. We also read about lots of stolen recipes. So there were lots of stories about baking contests,
and somebody stole somebody's
recipe.
And then
several of those involved stolen recipes. So that's what was stolen in the story.
She just had to steal it.
Gotta have that. Okay. Because this is another common theme. The same woman would win the baking contest every year, and the main character wanted to steal her recipe so she could win next year because she's tired of winning second place. That was a big thing. Tired of winning second place, going to steal the recipe and win first place. Several characters stole something that was rightfully theirs in the first place. Something that had been stolen from them previously. That was unique. I would have never gone that way, but a lot of people did. Lots of stories told of a planned theft, but the item was given to the character for free instead. And this would involve the character is planning to steal something, and the person running the booth felt sorry for them and just gave it to them for free before they had a chance to steal it.
That doesn't sound very exciting.
Well, that's true. Don't tell anybody you said that entered a story like that. So
I can always edit it out of here.
No, you don't need that. Joking. The special item that was supposed to be stolen was in a glass case, and some of those said not for sale.
It's another interesting one. Okay.
Several participants wrote about, this was a surprise, stolen kisses. Yeah. Romance stories, and they were going to steal a kiss.
Steal a kiss.
Yep. Yeah. Many stories had kings, queens, royalty, and Native American themes. Okay. Now, that wouldn't normally turn us off, especially if the topic drove like everybody that way, but this topic didn't seem to lead people in that direction, but it did, but it led a lot of people in that direction. So
as with all contests, some common themes also come back again and again, no matter what the topic is.
Yeah,
we see
it's
these
surprising.
Over and over. So,
and we do provide these to entrants ahead of time.
That's true.
They know.
Those things are listed
way.
On 24hourshortstorycontest.com.
Right. But they still go there.
And they still go there. Yeah.
See, people should really read the rules before. Anyway, go ahead.
Have we identified one of Angie's pet peeves?
That's true.
These can include the reader finds out at the very end that the main character is actually dead.
Bonk, bonk, bonk.
So visit back to the Lost series and everybody's dead. The story is about a writer participating in a writing contest.
Oh, well, man. Just don't even get me started on that. Oh, I know it. Ugh.
Yeah. We always receive countless domestic abuse stories, and we receive numerous stories about separation, divorce, and other relationship problems. We like to be upbeat and
well, it doesn't,
well,
doesn't
everybody
matter if
talks
it's
about it.
Sad
too.
Yeah. or boring or even horror or something. Yeah. It's just everybody does it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one is that you'll find out at the end of the entire story that it was actually just a movie, a TV scene, or a play, and we find out that the first scene of the story, usually the topic itself, is from a movie or a TV show or a play or even a book or an article that one of the characters is reading.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it's like...
It's like pretend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like the actual story isn't really a story.
And they think it's going to be a surprise at the end, but it happens so often that it's never, you know, it's just,
Another one. The reader finds out at the very end that the main character is actually an animal.
You want me to explain that?
Go for it.
Okay. So we actually got a couple like that for this past one. And it was, one of them was like a den of a fox with babies, and it had been a hard winter, and she was going to have to steal something to feed her babies and go to the fair to do it. Mm-hmm. But and the whole time you're reading, you think it's a woman who's got kids at home, but you find out at the end it's a fox.
And
it's
you know what?
Very common topic.
I think a great that could actually work if you were to start out with it was, you know, a fox. Write the story from a fox's point of view.
And we do get those.
That would be interesting.
Those do not break that one thing, that main theme that
we
see.
But don't try to make that
again.
The surprise.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. Let's see. We receive lots of stories featuring characters with dementia.
Oh, that's probably one of the biggest ones.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Another one at the end, the main character is an unborn child telling their story from the womb, and you only find out that it's a baby at the end.
Kind of similar to the animal one.
Trying to figure out how a baby in the womb is going to steal something, but okay.
I've been trying to figure out how babies in the womb can talk and write.
This is true. This is true. Main character dies at the end and is met by a loved one or an angel of some sort. We also see lots of dead friends, relatives, telling the characters that it's their time to die too, helping them to cross over. And yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Go into the light.
Yep.
The story is dramatic, but you'll find out at the end that the characters are really children playing make-believe.
That goes back to the animal one and the unborn baby one. It's just, it's not a surprise because so many people have done it.
Yeah. How about starting out with children playing make-believe and it actually, they somehow get transported into a real-life situation?
We're actually publishing a book about that right now.
We
should come back and add that book underneath this podcast when it's published.
Because
it's kids. And they're playing make-believe, but then all of a sudden they're not.
Yeah.
And they're involved in a real war.
Interesting. Yes. Can I give some details about the plot, or do you
sure,
want to hang
ahead.
To? It's kids, and they found some old abandoned
bus
body in the woods or something, and they're playing war, but somehow I guess they go through some portal or something that actually teleports them into World War II, and they actually have to infiltrate some Nazi fortress or something. Very interesting.
They have to survive and try to get back home.
Yeah. Really cool. I haven't read the book yet because it's still being published, but
well, we've talked to the author and we've read, I read part of it when I was considering the manuscript, but yeah, I'm definitely reading that book when it's finished. Yeah, the whole thing.
Okay, and the last one, I know this is big pet peeve, is the main character of the story is named Angela.
Yeah.
some of us use Angela's, or some also use Angela's family members or employees' names in the story. Sorry, you're not going to get any extra credit points for that.
In fact, you're just going to get a groan. When we announced that Clayton was joining the judging team for the contest, mm-hmm. The last contest, two people had the main character named Clayton.
Yeah.
So you gotta add him to it too. Yeah. So it's actually kind of insulting when writers pull some kind of trick like that to try to get extra points. That's not original and that's not creative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, are you ready to listen to these first and second place winners?
Yeah, especially the background gunshots and everything. Yeah.
Angie, what is the first place winner of the 24-hour short story contest.com win?
$300.
Okay. What else?
Plus a free book publishing package from Book Locker. And these are two little side items.
So already you're over $1,000 value right there.
Yeah. With the entry fees that we take in, which are only $5 mm-hmm. per person, and then with what I don't get paid for judging because it's part of my job, but Clayton does get because he's not an employee. He's a contractor, and he's awesome. We don't earn a profit on any of our contests.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's so much fun, I'll never give it up.
Yeah.
And it brings us a lot of publicity mm-hmm. for the website, which, again, writersweekly.com is free, completely free.
Yeah.
$300 book publishing package worth $975. They also on the side get a free print book of their choice from Book Locker and a 1-year subscription to the Wright Market Report, which we also publish. Allie pulls those together every month. And that's, we put those in when we get new markets for writers, we put them in the Wright Market Report and distribute the links by email to those are paying subscribers. And then later we put them on writersweekly.com.
Okay. So. All right. So again, and we had talked about this when we started the podcast. We said they had a great idea with the contest winners. We can actually read these, live on the air.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, not live on the air, but over the podcast.
Well, you know, we know what you mean.
Maybe someday I will start Writers Weekly Radio.
I know. Where I do too much.
But I liked the idea, but then I started thinking, hey, what if we enhanced it? and made it even better than just reading it. I gotta tell you, and you kind of know about this. I'm really blessed to come from a family of, I guess you'd call us storytellers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't do this deliberately, but in my family, it's so when we get together and we start talking about anything that's happened to us.
Oh, I've heard it.
It's just, we love just not just telling what happened, but it's just the enthusiasm in it.
And the details.
And the details, yeah, and everything. Right. I have a brother and a sister, and Angie loves it when we'll do a three-way call just to talk to each other and start and just tell each other about, you know, our week or whatever. Mm. And she loves me just to put it on speaker so she can listen to us banter back and forth.
It's laughter and laughter and laughter. It's just, you guys are hilarious.
And I had an uncle who is now deceased, but... our Uncle Donald on my mother's side, and he was a lieutenant in the Army, a ranger in Vietnam, and he could just talk any story he was telling, anything he was telling you about something that he had, not all war stories, but I'm just talking about anything that he had encountered or gone through. So he could just tell it in a way that just kept you riveted.
Wow.
And you just, you know, and he had this sense of humor that was just amazing. And my father was the same way, you know, when he would just talk to us about something that had happened at work or something mm-hmm. like that. He wouldn't just say, you know, such and such happened. I mean, you know, he just had a way of just building it up and giving little detail after little detail after little detail. And then finally the main punchline, I guess, of the story. But he would always keep us very riveted at the dinner table when he'd tell stories about things. And my brother and sister and I kind of do the same thing as when we, you know, we'll start talking.
Well, I've heard.
Oh, wait till you hear this one. Right. And then we'll just, and we may take 5 minutes to tell, you know, just something simple, but, you know, it's just the way we like to explain things and put the details in. It's almost like you were there.
Yeah.
And so, I really wanted to add these kind of aspects, so I thought...
Can I interrupt you for
yes.
a second? Brian's book is called Blue Lives Matter, The Heart Behind the Badge. If you want to read some of Brian's storytelling, and if you get the book, it's on Amazon and BookLocker and everywhere else. If you write to me on Writers Weekly, click on the Contact Me button, ask me which chapter Brian's mother got mad at him for. I can't say the name of the chapter on here because we are a family-friendly podcast.
When you're a cop, you run into a lot of stuff that is not family-friendly, but I decided when I wrote this book to... go ahead and expose people to that, because that's what I wanted. I wanted to shine a light on the fact that cops are nothing but human beings, just like you, just like anybody else. Mm-hmm. But the things they see and experience, not all bad, but some of them are just so out there.
So this one chapter, the chapter title is 3 words long. And Brian sent his mother a copy of his book, and I think she almost had a heart attack. She gets very upset about this chapter title. So you contact us on Writers Weekly. Either Brian and I or I'll write you back, and we'll tell you what that was. We're not going to put it on here.
All right. So let's dispense with the suspense.
Oh, very nice. And you're a poet, too.
And I didn't know it. Okay. All right. Let's get on with this. So first place winner's name was David Roberts, and he wrote a story called Steel Teeth. And hope you all enjoy it. Steel Teeth by David Roberts. Dull gray light suffused the morning air, overcast clouds acting as a weighted blanket. The sound of recycler masks and the monotonous trudge of the horses through the melting snow held Ash in a trance. Around her, the black dog troop carved a path through the morning frost, a living organism in a bleak landscape. Ash could practically see the radiation hanging in the air, a reminder of the sins of those long past. The faint outline of New Atlanta finally came into focus.
Towers like steel teeth rose into the sky above, rustling behemoths long since abandoned. As the troop drew within the outskirts of the city, Hunter called for a short respite. They'd pushed hard the past few days in an effort to beat the dead horse and dying sun clans from the south. Wouldn't want to tangle with those bastards if things went sour. Check your weapons. Remember the plan. I don't want any heroes today. Just do your job. A small spike of adrenaline coursed through Ash's veins as she cataloged the small armory strapped to herself. She unhooked her mask and took a deep breath of the crisp air, the purple flowers of the radiation-infused willow trees tickling her face. As they came closer to the fairgrounds, more groups became visible. Hands drifted to unseen weapons as each eyed the other suspiciously. As much as the spring fair was paraded as a neutral zone, one could never be too careful. Silently, they began to take their separate paths. Ash fell into step with Duster and Mace, the brothers thin as corn stalks but sharp as thorns. The sounds of nearby travelers haggling with local traders began to permeate the air the further in they went. Jostling through the crowds, they stopped at a dilapidated shack that had clearly been erected in a hurry. A man covered in radiation scars leered at them as they entered, his skeletal frame looking as if it would crumble at the slightest touch.
Ah, you three. Was curious if you'd show up.
Not rid of us yet, old man, Mace replied, a smile cracking his normally stoic face. They set two daggers and a kit of horse tack on the table, and Duster tallied out the coins to pay.
Any news from out west? Jerry wheezed.
Nothing but bandits and bad storms, mumbled Duster, pocketing the goods. As they turned to leave, Jerry's hand settled on Ash's shoulder, pulling her close.
Be careful. Dead horse made it in last night. Watch your backs.
Silently cursing, Ash slipped him a 5-piece coin, nodding her thanks. Guess they'd be making a swift exit. As they made it to the northern end of the fairgrounds, Ash hid behind an overturned cart, eyeing the row of boxes at the other end. The flag of the new Foundation Alliance fluttered in the weak breeze, nearby soldiers ensuring no one got close to the radiation meds. Winter had been hard this year, and already several lines had formed to get their yearly allotment. Not that it would be enough. As Ash fingered the bow strapped to her back, she caught sight of Damon and his group meandering towards the front, all according to plan. A raw scream pierced the air, freezing the blood in her veins. The once orderly lines of people in the square descended into a frenzied chaos as the cry of the dead horse was taken up. As she strung her bow, Ash sighted a group painted in black moving forward, rifles belching precious bullets into the soldiers guarding the meds. Their berserkers ran into the press, taking down those that remained. A series of horns, whistles, and war cries filled the air as every faction turned against those around them. Islands of humanity formed into the ocean of the courtyard, striving to guard each other's backs. Seeing Damon dash towards the boxes and Hunter following swiftly behind, Ash bolted towards the wagons that had been parked close by, loosing arrows all the way. Duster and Mace made swift work of those that came close, daggers flowing like water through the press of humanity. As her clan withdrew, carrying a half dozen boxes, the wail of sirens pierced the air. Time to leave, yelled Hunter, scrambling into the back of the wagon. The horses were kicked into action, the smell of blood and smoke propelling them forward. Ash shot her final arrow into a soldier pursuing on horseback, the thin frame creating a small dust cloud as it hit the dirt. How hard they fought for life didn't seem fair when it could be ended so quickly. Turning at the sound of a box being breached, she heard a cry of dismay. In Damon's bloody hand was a pack of emptied plastic cartridges, meds drained of the life they were supposed to grant. A trap. And as the sound of sirens grew louder and the stamp of the enemy drew closer, all Ash could think about was those towers of steel, laughing silently at the futility and the greed of those beneath them. Thank you.
I absolutely loved doing that one.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm more of a nonfiction guy, but I love a good dystopian post-apocalyptic story. And this one just, it was great. I really liked it.
I would want to remind everybody that the stories were read and judged and winners named before Brian put on his creative cap and added all that cool stuff in the background.
All you did was send me an email saying, okay, these are the three winners. Yeah. You know, these are what we're going to read. And then it was up to me to kind of figure out what I was going to do with it.
And then you came back and let me listen to it. I'm like, wow, where did you find all the sound effects? Pixabay.
I mean, it, you know, so the first thing Robert does here, you know, Ash is the main character. Mm-hmm. She never even speaks.
Right.
Everything is from her point of view, mm-hmm. but she never even says a word, which I thought was so unique. Yeah, yeah. It was just everything she was observing.
She was observing everything. Yeah.
And the descriptive way that he puts you in that place.
Yeah.
Every, you know, when you read it, you could see it.
I wanted to mention that the character that was talking with a wheeze.
Yeah, the Jerry.
In the story, David describes the character as wheezing, or I can't remember
he's an older guy who apparently got exposed to radiation and it messed up his health. So he's
in the writing, which if you go to the website, 24hourshortstorycontest.com, click on all winning stories, click on the current contest, you could read this story, how he wrote it. And you could tell the guy is wheezing because there's pauses. Like .. between, I write like a couple times in the middle of each sentence, and you could tell the guy's, you know, struggling, catch his breath. And of course, Brian did an excellent job doing that.
And the whole thing, the whole time you're reading it, I couldn't figure out what the ending was going to be. So he mm-hmm. kept the suspense there. You knew something bad was coming up.
Yeah.
There was tension in the air. Nobody trusts anybody, but they were up to something, mm-hmm. you know? And then in the end,
you know,
it was a failure.
Yeah,
and you don't know if they survived. Did they fight their way out? Did they, you know, it's up to you to figure, you know, you make up your own ending for that one. But I really love the way it just left it that, oh, crap.
Well, and now the last line was outstanding
and the idea that these buildings are actually witness to all this mm-hmm. chaos that's, yeah.
Daggers flowing like water through the course of humanity.
Amazing.
I couldn't write anything like
that. No, that was.
I'm good at nonfiction.
Really,
I'm not good at
really good.
That's why I like to read fiction so much because I don't write it very well. But the character descriptions were outstanding. There was lots of action, even without the background effects, the sound effects.
Yeah.
I was like reading that story really fast when I was judging it because I wanted to see what was going to happen. Briefly mentioned purple flowers tickling her face.
Yeah.
And that was great way to just kind of drop that in. You know, towers like steel teeth, and steel teeth is the name of the story. Completely unique title for the story.
It's such a passing mention, reference to the
story itself.
To the title. And then it brings you back to those buildings again in the end. Mm-hmm. And it kind of wraps it all up. It's like, wow.
Everyone who has seen a big city, I can see steel teeth.
Yeah.
It's all these big steel things pointing up in the sky. By far, aside from the outstanding adjectives and adverbs and the action and the characterization and the description of the characters and the description of the action, all tucked into 900-something words.
Yeah.
I think by far... the best part was the surprise ending where people were lured there, or people went there intent on stealing, and everybody wanted their radiation meds. And in the end, all the containers were empty, so somebody had already taken all the radiation meds.
Yeah.
So we don't even know who stole the meds.
No.
But that was a surprise.
And all that risk,
for nothing.
Planning, and suddenly it's like, you know, yeah, now you're going to have to fight for your life just to get out of that place.
But that's a different twist on the topic. is the topic is about a woman needing to steal something.
Yeah.
But in this story, something did get stolen.
Yeah.
not by the main character, but that's and that's completely allowed because it must only touch on this topic in some way to qualify.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It really exaggerated the human struggle, and mm-hmm. I just that it kept me riveted.
Well, in
I
those times, it is going to be exaggerated when those things are happening. But we want to thank David Roberts for providing that outstanding story for us. I've read it probably 10 times. Y'all can read it on the website, and he did give us permission to read it on this podcast.
And he is going to receive a copy of this MP3 file, mm-hmm. So that he can share that with whoever he wants.
I don't take any rights on this. Right.
I read it, and he's welcome to do whatever he wants with it and take full credit.
Yep,
so,
it's his.
But Dave, hey, if anyone's interested in who that voiceover was, you just send him my way. That's money in the bank right there, buddy.
He did a great job.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go to the second place winner. Second place, Angie, what did the second place winner win?
$250.
Okay.
A free book of his choice from booklocker.com, print book, and a free 1-year subscription to the Right Markets Report.
$250 ain't nothing to sneeze at. Yep. That's a nice chunk of change right there.
And as soon as they send me their PayPal ID, I immediately send them the money. No waiting for that money at all. Yep.
Second place winner is a person by the name of Bobby Gass. And the name of the story is Intolerable Deception of the Beverage.
Well, that
and
this one, get your curiosity
this one's
going.
Got some humor going.
Yeah,
I like
this
it.
Is a good one. Yeah.
And Bobby, it when I read it, the way you wrote it, it sounded to me like it should be. It sounded like it was written in a British Isles kind of accent. So forgive me if I've butchered a British accent, but I did the best
well,
I could.
Now that you've said something, people are going to write in about it. Say, oh, Brian, you forgot to accent this one.
If you are from the UK, apologies.
y'all enjoy.
This is a British accent attempted by an old Florida cracker.
You know what's funny is when you played it for me the other day, I'm listening to it and I'm like, he's accenting like every third or fourth word. But then you recorded it, but you still missed some words. I didn't say anything to you about it because it was adorable. Anyway, I think y'all get a kick out of this one.
All right, y'all. So this is Intolerable Deception of the Beverage by Bobby Gass. Intolerable Deception of the Beverage by Bobby Gass. The day had arrived. At last, just in time. She was out of nearly everything. Meadow Vera threw open the gates to allow the animals to spread over the hills, and in typically cautious fashion they did just that. It had been a brutal winter. Snow still remained in many of the shadowed vales. She watched the beast slowly spread out for a few minutes, then prepared for her own journey, the much-anticipated 3-day trek to the Spring Fair in Witherspin. In her best checkered meadow gown, she set out from her station. She was desperate for one thing in particular, for she had been without for nearly a month, and it had been hard indeed. She'd grown sluggish and blue and unappreciative. Nearly all that occupied her mind was revival replenishment. As she marched, she took scarce notice of the diminutive purple and crimson spring flowers blooming throughout the valley, a sight that typically brought music to her heart and a lightness to her step. She slept that first night along Martin's Creek, the stream wild and high with spring runoff. The next morning, she trudged off with sluggish haste. If that be an oxymoron, leave it be. She yearned to quicken her pace, but without life-giving brew coursing through her bloodstream, her feet seemed heavy as anvils, and she made slow progress. Tired she was, weary as a hibernating bear. She collapsed and slept heavily that second night in the cottage of Adelia Heatherspoon, the midwife. Adelia had already gone to the fair, but had left her door ajar for travelers. It took Meadowvera an hour the following morning to revive, to awaken, to move on. Such was her fatigue. But by mid-afternoon, she could see the banners waving in the cool breeze that announced that she was within sight of Witherspin. She perked up. She joined the throngs of revelers in the cobbled streets, greeted many, but stopped to talk to none. She soon entered the allotment house to receive her much-needed provisions. Waited in line only a short time before facing jovial Artie McFlounder, the provisioner. He, with the apple cheeks and yellow smile, greeted the meadow woman. "Ah, 'tis good to see you, Vera. I've got your necessities stowed in the handcart for you." "Thank the stars," Meadow Vera exclaimed. "I've been swooning for a pot of coffee for nearly a month." "Ah, well, there's the hitch, ain't it?" Artie said. "No coffee available except £20 for Squire Castleman up on the estate." At first, the woman failed to understand. Her smile remained. "What?" she said at last. "Aye, no coffee, Vera. It's promised." She could see the big black sack on the shelf back in the shadows. Inviting. Luring. "No, Mr. McFlounder, I must have it. I canna do without." But no help for it. After further pleading, Meadow Woman was escorted out to sit beside her provision cart near the stone bridge in despair. Music and colorful dances imbued the village with cheer, but Meadow Vera thought of death. Till late at night, when lights were extinguished and silence descended, she pried open the window with a bent tomato knife. Oh, she knew it was wrong. A sin. But good heavens, she must have a coffee. Who could not understand that? She made a terrible racket getting inside the allotment house, but aroused not a soul. She dropped a heavy burlap sack of roasted beans into her cart positioned just outside the window. With a wicked thrill, she pushed the cart ahead of her out of Witherspin. The wheel of the cart cried for grease, alerting the night creatures, but again no one answered. She got away. Despite her weariness, she didn't stop all that night and the following day. The flowers sprinkling the valley with color had never been as lovely, and she sang loudly and greeted the birds and the budding trees like old friends. That night she stopped again beside Martin's Creek, the strong current of sympathy that plucked Meadow Vera into a delicious sleep. Finally, reaching her cottage beside the meadow gates, she laughed with guilty pleasure and stored her provisions. "Squire Castleman is an arrogant flatterer anyway," she said out loud in justification. "He's got everything already. If he wants coffee, he could send a servant to the city. I needed my coffee. Everyone understands that, for goodness sake." Whilst grinding beans and preparing the enamel pot for her first delectable pot of life-giving nectar, Vera chanced a careless glance at the bean sack, and her heart stopped. She fell to the floor, stifling a sob. Hoping against hope that perhaps she'd misread, she curiously arose to look again. "Oh, God, no! It can't be!" she groaned with a fading spirit. "It's decaffeinated!" "Oh, that was such a delight to play."
Kind of painful to listen to at times. Your old lady voice, though, is awesome.
Well, thank you. Yeah. This was a challenging one because a lot of the words, I mean, the way that...
the way she spelled the words.
The way the words are put on there, it's not regular American English, so right. I was kind of struggling a little bit with the way it was worded. But and again, apologies for the British accent. I did the best.
I think you took a hatchet to several different accents.
I may have had three different accents
in
it.
Little bits of Irish in there. And yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, well, my family does have an Irish background to it, so. Grandmother on mom's side was an O'Sullivan, so.
Well, I thought her descriptions were outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
The characterization. What was his name? McFlounder?
Artie McFlounder.
Artie McFlounder.
The great
names. When I was
names.
Reading
great
the story,
names.
Yeah. I started laughing out loud when I saw McFlounder. That was hilarious. And great description of him with his yellow teeth.
Yeah.
You know, his red face and yellow teeth. She said, what'd she say? Her feet felt like anvils.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Yeah.
Sluggish pace and saying if that's a moron. You know,
I love that where you actually, the writer actually stops to address the reader. I mean, that's great. It just kind of, it's this interruption in the story that gives you a little chuckle and it puts you right back into
right.
it. And,
yeah.
it was very well done, very smooth.
So sluggish pace, if that's an oxymoron, so be it or something.
So, yeah.
I can't remember what she said.
Leave it be.
Yeah. In the beginning... I was getting worried about that. I mean, what did she not have? What did she really need? Was she even going to make it to the fair? Because
yeah.
she was feeling so poorly.
I
could not figure out what it was.
I was actually thinking some magical potion that she has to take on a regular basis to keep her youth up or something like that.
Well,
I had no idea it was going to turn into cough.
Brian, that would have been one of our common topics because of the apothecary.
Yeah, I'm doing it. Apothecary.
Yeah, that.
Apothecary.
That word, yeah.
Yes. I really liked the names too. You know, the, mm-hmm. that was really, really funny the way they put the names together. And one thing I noticed is that Bobby used a lot of incomplete sentences.
Mm-hmm.
They were not, you know, if this must have drove Clayton nuts. if you're, you know, I mean, if you're kind of a proper English stickler, as we are, kind of, it kind of jumps out at you, but it really made the story.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of the way you would expect some Irishman or Brit to talk, just kind of starting almost mid sentence without. Pronouns or prepositions
well,
or anything
of,
like
a lot
that.
Of Americans do that too.
That's true.
And
yeah.
it's perfectly fine when you're writing fiction to write how your character is speaking.
Yeah.
And
or
even
the narration is done that way.
Yeah,
but
but
yeah.
her punctuation was spot on.
Yeah.
It's not like she botched anything in the story. It's
oh no no no
reading,
I'm,
yeah,
I'm that's not a complaint. I think it was an incredibly creative way to do that.
It led to readers understanding exactly how she felt.
Yeah.
And even her thinking.
Yeah.
So the squeaky wheels when I first read the story,
mm-hmm.
and again you can read these stories online without the sound effects. And which is how we did it. The squeaky wheels made me so nervous when I was reading. I'm like, she's going to get caught. But then when you put the sound effect in there, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
I've listened to it, 3-4 times now, and I laugh every time.
This was actually, I think, a little more difficult than the first place we because I had to come up with so many different sound effects and music. I had to change the music throughout. So, I really enjoy doing that too. It's a real fun creative
and
process.
By far, the best part was the surprise ending.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expected decaf, especially because it seems like this was like an older time period.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So nobody expected
I don't
that.
Even know if that was a technology back then, but hey,
okay,
you know, it worked.
You know
worked
what?
Out
it worked.
Great.
It worked.
All that she went through to steal this coffee and it turns out completely useless
decaf.
To
her.
It
was her. Great.
Yeah.
It was very creative. Yeah. We loved it. Absolutely loved it. So.
All right, so that's the first and second place winners of this quarter's 24-hour short story contest.
And you can read the third place winner.
Third place winner is going to be on the website, too.
And on the website, every single winner who's ever won one of our contests in the past 20-plus years, for every contest, the first, second, and third place winners are on the website. Mm-hmm. So if you want to enter the contest, I recommend you go in and read lots of those. And all of them have the topic above the story, so you can see how people got really original with that.
And it's not just first, second, and third place winners. We also have
100 honorable mentions.
100 honorable mentions, and each one of those people get a free book from booklocker.com. And so your chances of winning or winning something are pretty good.
They win a free ebook from booklocker.com that is writing related.
Mm-hmm.
And they also get a 1-year subscription to the Right Market Report.
Yes, I forgot about it. It is a free ebook.
And some people don't want an ebook. They want to use their winnings to register for the next contest.
We some of these like people do it over and over, and then yeah, just because it's
they
so
do
much
every
fun.
Contest. Yeah.
So. And I mean, for $5, that's your entry fee. $5.
And you get more than enough entertainment. From
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So
we. Yeah. So we would absolutely love to hear your comments about these stories or anything about the 24-hour short story contest. Mm-hmm. Angela, how can they tell you what they thought about these stories?
Go to writersweekly.com, click on the contact us link at the top. Goes directly to me.
There you
and go. And if it's something that you need to say about Brian's accent, I will definitely forward your message to him, and you'll hear back from him.
You know what? We might even have to read people's comments about my attempt at a British accent. So feel free to throw mud at Brian if you want, and we will share that with the on the next podcast. Okay, so that pretty much wraps it up. I hope that you all had as much fun listening to this as we had reading these stories, and that I had putting these together audio-wise. It is a lot of fun, especially if you're a creative writer and you enjoy just, you know, putting stories together.
Oh, everybody loves it.
So 24hourshortstorycontest.com.
The next one's in July.
Jump in, you know, join us and have a good time with this. Angie, I'll leave the last wrap-up words for you. Any last thoughts?
Well, I just want to mention the winter one always happens in January. And the dates vary because sometimes there's holidays, sometimes there's foreign holidays. Justin at our office is the one who picks the dates because he's got to research different holidays and what to avoid and stuff. Mm. So January is the winter contest. April is the spring contest. July is the summer contest. And September is the fall contest because we always announce the winners before before Halloween. But again, the dates of the each contest vary depending on... It's always got to be a Saturday, of course. So just go to the website, and we've already said it 100 times, so you don't need to... You know, we don't need to repeat it again. And go, enter the next contest. We'll add you to the list, but don't delay because only 500 participants are allowed per contest.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week on the next episode of the Writers Weekly podcast. Thanks again for joining us. See y'all later.
Everybody have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.